Well, I'm going to speak for yourselves. Sponsored by the Popeye's Chicken Sandwich. Mmm, good. All right, Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Speak for yourself from the crib on a Tuesday afternoon. Awesome show planned for you. The NFL draft is just 2 days away this Thursday. And Jalen Hurts, the Oklahoma quarterback, former Alabama Crimson Tide quarterback, he's going to join us. He's going to pull up later in the show. We'll reset the Scottie Pippen conversation should the Bulls have restructured his contract. We'll do that with Jim Jackson in the question of the day. But first, we're going to go out to Boston to the man I consider the authority on the New England Patriots, Greg Bedard of Boston Sports Journal. He's the founder, editor of the Boston Sports Journal. Long time been associated with the New England Patriots, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, the foremost authority. And so we have some New England Patriots stuff to talk about. What they're going to do in this draft this Thursday, Peter King of NBC predicting that the New England Patriots will move up to the 13th pick of the draft, make a trade with the San Francisco 49ers so they can get Tua Tagovailoa, the Alabama quarterback, the left-handed quarterback that, you know, some say has some injury problems, certainly has an injury history, left-handed, about 6 foot, 6 foot one. Would he be the perfect replacement for Tom Brady? And so we'll start with Greg Bedard, the foremost authority on the Patriots. Should the Patriots go all in on moving up in the draft to go get Tua?
Jason, the short answer is no. I mean, do I think he would be a perfect replacement for Tom Brady? Yes. And in a normal season with normal draft capital, yeah, you would say the Patriots could make a play for Tua. But this is not one of those years, unfortunately. The Patriots are tied up against the cap. They have the oldest team currently in the league after free agency, just like they have been the past 2 years. This is a team that has pick number 23, and then they don't have another pick until 87. So if you're talking about ammunition about moving up, you're using a draft pick, first-round pick next year, possibly dangling Joe Tooney, the all-pro guard, out there as sort of a late first, early second type. But I don't think they have the ammunition. And then there's the other thing about, is Tua really going to slip? And I know there's a lot of conversations about the Dolphins not taking him, the Chargers. But from the league sources that I've talked to, they think that the Dolphins have been putting on a major smokescreen, that they are actually in on Tua. And I just don't see Tua slipping into the teens in this draft. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, this makes no sense to me as well. They don't have enough cap space in terms of all of their needs. They have to address so many issues on both sides of the football. A lot of departures out of New England this offseason. And more importantly, I don't think that Tua will slip. So if you're the New England Patriots, you're Bill Belichick, you have to realize what you have and get a return on an investment in Jarrett Stidham. Now, Jarrett Stidham is trying to replace a legend. That's nothing new to me. And it's not going to be anything new to Jarrett Stidham, because when you're getting those practice reps, as I was getting those practice reps in 2000 behind Bruce Smith, and when he left the team, it was all on my shoulders. And I performed well in the absence of a legend. Now, I'm not certain how Jarrett Stidham's going to respond, but at least give the guy the chance, the opportunity. You've invested in him. A lot of great remarks made about him in his practice sessions. It's time for him to convert that on to the playing field. Trust me, sometimes being the unknown guy, people always doubting and critiquing you, someone inside that building, and hopefully it's Bill Belichick, believes in Jarrett Stidham and gives him that chance.
Look, there's a lot of people, including Marcellus Wiley, who think Tua Tagovailoa is the best quarterback in this draft. And if not for the injury history, I think his prospect would probably be the number one pick if not for his injury history. I think the only team that it makes sense for is for Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. They're playing with house money, Greg. They've been to 9 Super Bowls, won 6. It's Bill Belichick. Tom Brady has moved on. Why not take a gamble on a guy that many people believe is clearly the best quarterback in this draft if you remove the injury history?
Jason, I agree with you. And I talked to a league source not too long ago who was like, you know, if he didn't have the injury this past season, we wouldn't even be talking about this, that he would be going perhaps number one overall over Burroughs. But the thing is, it's like they just don't have enough ammunition to go up and get him, especially if you're talking about if he doesn't get out of the top 10. They just don't have the picks. I mean, I can't see Belichick next year when they're, you know, basically half the
49ers don't owe. Do the 49ers owe Bill Belichick, perhaps, that he handed them Jimmy Garoppolo? Maybe there's a friendly deal to be had here between them and John Lynch?
You're not the only one who thinks that there's a little bit left on the table from the Jimmy G trade. But, you know, you never know. I mean, 13, I think it's possible. But anything before that, forget it. They don't have the ammunition to go up and get him.
Marcellus, don't you think Patriots, without Tom Brady, don't they have to go out and get a quarterback in this draft?
No. No, not at all. Like, Tua's slam dunk the best quarterback prospect in this draft. The injuries, I think, are being exaggerated. We play a contact sport, deep with some contact injuries. And at times, because of scheduling and calendar, he rushed back to those situations.
Yeah.
And I don't think that he's, quote unquote, injury prone. But in terms of delivering the football, playing the position in the pocket, mobility, arm strength, mental acumen, everything you want to list, Tua will be special in the league. And it's amazing. You talk about Tua versus Justin Herbert. You talk about Tua versus Joe Burrow. Everyone has questions on the translation of Burrow's game to the NFL. Some questions about Herbert's game in the NFL. No questions about Tua's game, just his injury concerns, which I think are being exaggerated.
All right, let's move on to another topic. Bill Belichick versus Tom Brady. There's a question of who's going to win more games. Vegas has differing lines. The Buccaneers may win 9. I think the Patriots line I saw was them at 8.5. But I want to ask you, Greg, who's more motivated to prove they can win without the other, Bill Belichick or Tom Brady?
It's interesting, Jason, because for years I would have said, and I've heard from Patriots sources that said that they believe that Bill wanted to see whether he could win without Tom at some point. I'm talking like this is years ago. But now, given the circumstances and where he's gone, I got to think it's Tom Brady. I mean, for him to go out on his own at this point, all by himself, he's not going like, say, Josh McDaniels got a head coaching job and he joined him out there. And it's a different system. It's a different total surrounding cast. It's a different city. It's different everything. And Tom Brady is, I mean, his legacy's not at stake. But, I mean, he's put a lot out there. And I think Tom is the most driven right now to win without the other one.
Oh, it's definitely Bill Belichick. He's built for this. This is not his first rodeo in terms of departing a great and showing his greatness. Ask DeTuna about this and Bill Parcells and their relationship and him being a defensive coordinator, him finally branching off to become Bill Belichick, the GOAT of all coaches. So I think right now he has a head start in terms of how to handle this new situation, how to handle adversity, how to handle the questions, and also the performance where Tom Brady's going to all new variables. And this is going to be a new thing for Tom Brady. So I think the experience of Belichick, and I don't want to call it petty, but certainly Belichick has a part of his mindset that's compartmentalized to showing I am great, not so much we are great. He did it with Bill Parcells. He's going to be able to do it with Tom Brady.
Yeah, I hate to disagree with Greg because he obviously knows the parties involved a lot better than I do, but I just don't think either one of these guys have anything to prove, but Bill Belichick has absolutely nothing to prove. He won Super Bowls as a defensive coordinator with Bill Parcells and the New York Giants and Lawrence Taylor. Yeah, he flopped in Cleveland, but 9 Super Bowls in New England, 6 Super Bowl titles, 11-5 with Matt Castle as a quarterback or whatever they were. I just don't think there's anything to prove for Bill Belichick. And so I think Tom Brady has more passion, which leads me to my next question, Greg. Tom Brady, in this very unusual offseason, he's moved on to a new environment in Tampa. And I'm wondering if you think that this disjointed offseason is going to hurt Tom Brady's ability to have a successful first campaign in Tampa Bay?
It's a great question, and of course it will affect him. And I think probably privately, Bill Belichick's a little bit excited, and he's just like, all right, just cancel the whole offseason and let's just, you know, have 2 weeks of training camp and go into it, because Tom's got to go there and he's got to put in protections. He has to get with these receivers to get them to run the routes the way that he wants to. Are they going to all of a sudden now be running option routes and conversion routes and things like that were staples of things that Tom Brady did for 20 years all of a sudden in Tampa without a training camp and things like that? So, yeah, I think marrying the Bruce Arians, what he wants to do, what Tom Brady wants to do, that whole system, that's going to take time in the classroom, on the playing field, practice time. So the longer this drags out and the longer the Bucs have to stay out of their facility, the tougher transition it's going to be for Tom Brady. And remember, you know, Peyton Manning, when he went to Denver, and everybody talks about how well that conversion went, if I'm not mistaken, Peyton Manning didn't win a Super Bowl until year four in Denver. So it's a tough transition. And for people to think Tom Brady with just a year or two left is all of a sudden going to knock it out of the park without any offseason, it's not going to happen.
I disagree with you, Greg, right there. Look, it's going to have the same effect on all players, maybe an effect on players who prepare more a little greater. But I think this will everyone's going to feel the pinch from the fact that you can't prepare as normal. But here's the thing. So since you can't prepare like normal, what do? You dumb down the offense. Oh, we're going to dumb down an offense with all these weapons for a genius at quarterback. And Tom Brady is known for the outlet passes, the option routes, short intermediate throws. And those are, in relative scope, the easier throws to make compared to the deep balls and going to the deeper parts of the playbook. So scaling it back with their running game and their receiving core is actually going to play into Tom Brady's hands, because that's what he likes to do. Have those option routes, those short, intermediate, the crossings, the outlets, the leaking out the backfield. All those things are closer to day one offensive playbook than it is the latter. So I think Brady will be fine.
Marcellus, I got to go back at you and just say, as a player, I know a lot of players, particularly at the professional level, don't believe in practice as much as the coaches do. But the one group that I just don't think that's true about is quarterbacks. Tom Brady, timing, hand signals, communication, body language signals. You don't think the guy's out on a practice in a park right now in Tampa, and they're kicking him off the field. You don't think Tom Brady and a quarterback is more vulnerable, a new quarterback in a new situation is more vulnerable than perhaps anybody else in the NFL?
Well, one, you can always simulate as much as you can with mental reps, and that's a thing in NFL. As they're scaling back physically in all NFL facilities in terms of practice time and physicality, the mental reps are perking up and peaking. So what's happening now? You're going to get more mental reps. I think that comes into play. Two, the chemistry that you lose on the field, you can try and recreate that in terms of when you get out there and you say, look, we're all playing shoulder options. So basically, the way that they line up, we play opposite of that. That was a thing in New England for Tom Brady. I knew he knew that system like the back of his hand. However, last three OTAs, last three off seasons with Tom Brady in New England, wasn't there. You know, Tom Brady has missed off seasons before in New England, maybe out of spite, but also because he knew this system. This system, it won't be that difficult for him to pick up. It's just the chemistry, the continuity, that he may be a step behind, but thankfully, everyone will be a step behind, not just Tom Brady.
Yeah, see, I completely disagree with Marcellus, and I think that, you know, the longer this goes on, and I can tell you NFL teams are operating under the guise that, or at least most of them, that there will be no offseason, that there may be a truncated training camp. And to me, this is going to favor every team that kept their coach, quarterback, defensive coordinator, scheme, all those teams that kept everything together. They are going to have a much bigger head start. I mean, teams with Matt Rhule, Mike McCarthy as coaches trying to install new systems, Tom Brady trying to marry what he's done for 20 years with Bruce Arians, all those teams are going to be a step back, and it's just a question of when is it going to click for them and will they have enough time to make the playoffs?
You just heard it from Greg Bedard, the Kansas City Chiefs. My Kansas City Chiefs are going to repeat as Super Bowl champions because of this offseason. Great prediction, Greg.
Yeah, right.
All right, appreciate you, brother. Yeah. Thanks for coming
on. Thanks, guys.
Greg Bedard of the Boston Sports Journal. That segment was brought to you by the Popeyes Chicken Sandwich. All right, don't go anywhere. The greatest leader in college football history, Jalen Hurts. Mm. We're going to go out to his crib. Hurts!
Talking about ED isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work. Or, sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it with a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. ED used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to GetRoman.com/speak to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/speak for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/speak.
That's my dog. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley on a Tuesday afternoon. All right, time to pull up in Houston. Pull up to a excellent quarterback and even better leader, Jalen Hurts. Mm. The former Alabama Crimson Tide quarterback, the superstar with the Oklahoma Sooners last year. Jalen, I want to start with a somewhat of a crazy question. Do you think your leadership qualities actually overshadow or stop people from appreciating your actual talents as a quarterback? I'm so enamored with your leadership qualities that I don't think I fully appreciate just your physical talents as a quarterback.
Well, you know, everybody sees it from a different lens. And for me, I always try to be a positive influence around the guys I'm around, set the right example, do the right things, and just go out there and perform at a high level. Very fortunate to have played for the two schools I've played for and have had the success I've had with both of those schools. So, like unprecedented times right now, my whole entire college career was unprecedented. So, being able to lead at two dominant programs and win championships at both, it was special.
All right, after you save Alabama's season, I tweeted out, I hope one day this guy runs for president because of just the way you've handled that situation. If you were not an NFL quarterback, what would you do with your life?
I don't know. I never put a limit on myself. I'm not saying I run for president, but definitely being a position where I can impact people. I know I have two men in my family that are coaches at the high school level, so I could use my degree, put it in use. A lot of different things I could do, but regardless, I'd be one to help and being a positive influence and impacting people.
Now, let's circle back to you being a leader. That situation with you at Tua, Alabama, you handled it so selflessly. It seems like you got undervalued as a competitor. 38-4 record on the field. Talk about how ruthless a competitor you really are.
Yeah, I'm a dog, a warrior. I'm a relentless competitor. You know, I try and go out there and be the best I can be every day. And I've been around great people that have been able to push me to do those things. And I tell you, this football stuff, man, this is what I love to do. The desire, the constant thirst for knowledge every day, to get better every day, and take those steps. It's always been a goal, is just to be the best. And to have this opportunity in front of me, it's a blessing.
Yeah, and there's a comparison to some great quarterbacks, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, others. Who do you compare yourself and your game to?
You know, I can see those. And as well as a guy I have a lot of respect for, probably more so your time, Steve McNair. That guy there, man, the physical abilities he had, the ability to throw the ball like he did, and how he used his skill set. He was a very dominant player. And for me, I take notes on everything. I'm a sponge. I soak it all in, and if it can make me better, I'm always jotting it down, and I'm always taking notes. So there's a lot of great quarterbacks, and I'm always all eyes and ears.
Yeah, a lot of great quarterbacks. Not as many great developers of quarterbacks, but you played for one in Lincoln Riley. What makes Coach so special in terms of developing quarterbacks?
Yeah, Coach Riley, man, it's crazy how it all went down, you know, because I got there in such a short time, and, you know, he kind of does what he does within his system. And biggest thing for me was just going in there and learning it, spending a lot of time with CeeDee Lamb and all the other guys, and getting it down. And from there, it was kind of go out there and perform and go win ball games. I've had a lot of great coaches over my college career, going from Mike Locksley to, you know, Dan Enos, Coach Kiffin, Coach Sark, and Dable. All of them have played a pivotal role in who I am as a quarterback. So I'm appreciative of them all.
Yeah, and you also play for the GOAT of all college coaches, Nick Saban. The greatest difference between Coach Saban and Coach Riley?
Man, one's about, what, 65, 70 plus. So I don't know how old Coach Saban is. I forgot. and one's, you know, in his mid-30s. But, you know, Coach Saban, he's a very impressive guy, man, like Coach Riley. Great coaches.
Now, how much was the talent gap between the SEC and the Big 12? And don't lie to me, dog.
Man, you know, people have an assumption about Big 12 defenses. I had a lot of respect for them. They're very physical. They rally to the ball. They run different schemes defensively. But it was challenging, and I accepted and I embraced it, preparing for those different things. And it was cool to be able to say that. Not many people, obviously, can say they played in two conferences and won conference championships in both.
Jalen, are you trying to break some news with that Cowboys banner behind you and the name Hurt? What am I looking at that properly? Are you campaigning to go to Dallas?
Look, I didn't even think about that before I sat right here. This is a deal. So look, when I was in high school, they had these awards. Texas High School Football Player of the Week. And me and my brother, you see, that's my brother's name right there. If I move my head, mine's over there. But yeah. See, look, But nonetheless, it was an award that me and my brother won in high school, and they actually had the ceremony in Dallas at the stadium. So we were able to go down there when we were in high school, and that was cool. Great experience. So this is, it's just on the wall from when we were kids in high school.
Let me ask you about your draft prep, going through the combine, the interview process. Did any teams, and you don't have to name them if they did any teams try to suggest to you about changing positions?
No, sir. I've won a lot of ball games playing this position. The whole time, my face is getting out of the camera. Yeah, see what that's about. Technical difficulties. Did we get it?
That's going to be all over the internet. You're trying to replace Dak Prescott, man. That's going to be all over the internet.
See, y'all having fun with that. I'm not even entertaining that right there. But
okay, so no one asked you about switching positions. That's what I was at. No one asked you about switching positions. Do you think the success that Lamar Jackson had this season changed the way people will evaluate quarterbacks, particularly athletic quarterbacks who can run a little bit? Has he permanently changed the way they're viewed as NFL prospects?
Yes, sir. I think it introduces a unique dynamic at the position, and so just for me to have this opportunity going into this next level, going into the next step, and see how things are changing offensively. I think there's a great fit. You know, I talked about guys like Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, and Steve, and so forth. So we'll see what happens. I'll be ready to go to work, and I'll be as hungry as ever for sure.
All right, I'm going to circle back to my dream presidential team for 2044, I believe. Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, who would be vice president and who would be the president in that scenario?
Does a president get to vote for themselves?
Absolutely.
I don't know. I don't know how that works, but that'll be for the people to decide.
Oh, that was a presidential right. answer right well, there. That was.
He will be president one day. All right, let's get out of here with a question up from Gillette. How has the Gillette helped you prepare for the NFL draft?
Yeah, they're doing a lot of great things, given the circumstances, virtual, red carpet. Give me an opportunity to showcase some swag and showcase my outfit for the big day. So hopefully I got y'all's approval on that.
Yes,
you
sir.
You certainly have our approval. And thank you so much for the time. Good luck with whatever team drafts you. You're going to be an amazing leader, an amazing quarterback. You're going to have a lot of success. Thank you so much, Jalen. All right, stick around. Don't go anywhere. Speak for yourself from the crib rolls on. Jim Jackson's going to join us with Darnell for Darnell's question of the day about Scottie Pippen and getting dogged by the Chicago Bulls. All right, speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai.
My guy. My question of the day.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. All right, let's roll out to Darnell Smith's crib. He's got our question of the day. And then we're going to bring in his homeboy, Jim Jackson, for this question of the day as well. Yeah. If y'all going to go ahead and flex now before we get to the question of the day. All right, Darnell, it's over to you.
Yes, sir. Let's talk the Last Dance documentary about Jordan and the Bulls. The doc went deep on Scottie Pippen's contract and how underpaid he was. Well, yesterday, Whitlock and Wiley were on different sides about if the Bulls should have reworked Pippen's deal. Whitlock thought the Bulls owed it to Pippen to pay him more, where Wiley argued that Pippen signed the deal, so he's pretty much stuck with it. Iceberg Jim Jackson, I'm going to toss to you. Do you think the Bulls owed it to Pippen to rework his deal?
The simple answer is yes. They did owe him based on where he was at in his career, 97-98. But you got to put it in context of the time. When Scottie signed his extension, he was kind of one of the more higher paid players in the league, okay? Then the TV money kicked in. That's when the numbers started to expand as far as other guys making big time money. But back in those days in the early 90s, you had more flexible ability in the cap to go back and restructure deals. But the owners at that time, they weren't doing it. You know why they weren't doing it? Because they didn't want to. They didn't have to. They weren't forced to. Yeah, Karl Malone may have gotten a couple of different extensions in Utah. I know Charles Oakley, on the back end of his, when he went over to New York, wasn't happy with his contract. They gave him a balloon payment to kind of make up for the money the Bulls didn't pay him. But owners at that time felt that if you signed the deal, you were locked in, and I don't have to pay you. I don't have to go back in and renegotiate a contract or pay you more money. That was the mindset back in the early 90s. I'm the boss. You're the employee. I signed you to a deal. You live up to that deal. Now, whatever, if I pay you a little bit more, am I going to come back in and say, well, you know, you're not living up to the contract, so I'm going to take some money back? No. That's how the owners thought back in the day. And keep in mind, I'm someone that lived it. Not only do I hold the record for, you know, tied for the record for playing on most teams with 12, I have the longest holdout period ever by a rookie. You know why? I was the fourth pick in the NBA draft in 1992, and the Mavericks said, you know what? We don't really feel like paying a two guard his market rate. So I had to hold out and only play 28 games that year. So trust me, I've been there, I lived it, I witnessed it, and that's why they didn't go back and give Scottie his money.
Hey, man, they don't owe Scottie Pippen anything. I'm glad Jim broke it down like that, even though we have a different conclusion. Context matters, but also just in summation, when you sign a contract, the fine print says, I hope you read every single word of this because you're agreeing to everything on this page. And Scottie Pippen did. Scottie Pippen, when he signed the deal, said, I had to take care of myself and my family. I couldn't risk getting injured. And it was good money at the time. So all of that matters. If Scottie Pippen went out on the town in Chicago with that linen suit on celebrating that contract, well, damn it, he was happy with what he signed. And I know he was happy at that time. Let's also remember a few other things. Scottie Pippen earned more money on the court than Michael Jordan did in his career. Pause. People need to understand that Scottie Pippen got end up getting paid. At the time that Scottie Pippen signed a 7-year, $18 million contract, Michael Jordan was making $3 million a year, and Scottie Pippen had just elevated himself up to $2.8 million a year. Scottie Pippen put himself in the top 20, 2 years in the top 10. Scottie Pippen all of a sudden found himself in a place where he felt like I was getting paid. But then the times changed, brother, and the money started to come. And then Scottie Pippen realized, hey, I'm not getting paid. But here's where management saw Scottie Pippen not exactly pulling in the same direction. Y'all remember, what was it, Eastern Conference Finals, 1994, final play. Scottie Pippen, upset that he didn't get the ball, sat down and was like, I don't care what happens in this game. I'm not involved. How can you get a restructured contract when in one of the critical moments of your team's success, you decide that you want to tap out? So the devil's in the details with this. He signed on to this. He showed that he was disgruntled and tapped out on this organization before. I don't think they reward that type of behavior.
Well, what they have to reward to me is he was the critical piece other than Michael Jordan in them winning their fourth and fifth championships. He was, regardless of what happened in that 94 Eastern Conference Finals, and I remember it vividly, and I remember criticizing Scottie Pippen at the time. But the facts are the facts. If a guy helps you win first three and then two more championships, and he's that critical of a piece, when Michael Jordan was gone the first retirement, Pippen finished third in the MVP voting. You treat an employee that outperforms his contract. You're talking about a 7-year contract. He didn't outperform a 3 or 4 year and then or a 2-year deal and or whatever and just come back and immediately wants money after 1 or 2 years. This was a 7-year deal that was clear by year 4, 5, and certainly 6. This guy had delivered far more than this. You take care of this guy. He made a mistake. He made a negotiating error. You don't exploit it. You try to make the best of it and keep that Bulls dynasty together. I just don't think this is the way you treat someone that's delivered for you and your organization at that level for that long of a period of time. They should have made things right. And, yeah, Scottie Pippen ended up making more than Jordan, and that's thanks to the, you know, Houston Rockets and the Portland Trail Blazers and other teams not named the Chicago Bulls. Take care of Scottie. Take care of Michael. Take care of Phil. That was the critical trifecta right there that none of these guys could really. Phil Jackson, a 1-year, $6 million deal in his last season. They announced this as last season. Jerry Reinsdorf, Jerry Krause blew up a dynasty because they treated people poorly rather than treat them like valued employees. It frustrates me, but just thinking about it again, I can't wait till next Sunday. Jim,
Well, here's the thing, too. Keep in mind, Jerry Reinsdorf, even when he signed Michael Jordan to that huge deal, $33-plus million, said he would regret signing Michael Jordan to a deal like that. This is Michael Jordan you're talking about. So in context, when you're talking about the ownership owed it, yes, they did. But the mindset back then, when players really didn't have the leverage that they have today, it was, if I don't want to pay you, I don't have to pay you. I'm not pressured. Again, back then, you couldn't blame it on the salary cap. It wasn't as restrictive back then to go in and sign a player as Karl Malone, who went back and got it. You could have a balloon payment on the back end to make up for money that you weren't able to make for a player during their contract. But back then, the owners didn't look at it like that. And it's an unfortunate situation in Chicago's the organization that this is a team that when you look at destiny, dynasty, what they did, what they've done for the growth of the NBA, they had another shot, maybe that next year, at doing something extremely special again. But because ownership, whether that was Jerry Krause, okay, who got a lot of the blame, but at the end of the day, it was Jerry Reinsdorf that had the ability to veto or okay a deal. Just like when Scotty was going to get traded maybe to Seattle, he nixed that deal, okay? So I agree with you, but I lived during that time and I played during that time. And again, that relationship back then was, I'm the boss, you're the employee, you're going to do what I say, and that's the way it goes, unless you had extreme leverage, which a lot of players at that time didn't have.
Marcel, before you jump in, I want you to respond to this, Marcel, as a Los Angeles guy. Magic Johnson at one point signed a 25-year, $25 million contract. You think Jerry Buss would handle Magic Johnson or Scottie Pippen the way that Jerry Reinsdorf did? Do you honestly think the good ownership, you think Red Auerbach would do that to his Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, any of these guys? I get, Jim, that there were some owners with a different mentality. But, yeah. But Marcel, Jerry Buss, this is not the way he would have operated.
I don't know. There were two signatures on that 25-year deal, $25 million contract, and one of them was Jerry Buss's. So, look, it was a whole different mentality.
They didn't hold Magic to it.
A whole different economy. And listen to this. So in 81, Magic signs that deal. And then in 88, Michael Jordan, who's already Michael Jordan, signed an 8-year deal for $25 million. The day before they started filming this documentary, you know how much Michael Jordan was making in 1996? $3.8 million, while Scottie Pippen was almost making $3 million. So the gap wasn't that wide. It was the next year when Jordan finally got the $30 million and the $33 million. And then Pippen ended up leapfrogging that and getting his money in Houston. Here's the thing about it. When you look at all of this money, Jordan never got restructured. Scottie Pippen did get restructured because, like Jim is saying, you locked in, brother. We don't know where this money is going, but we're not going to be early to that party. We're going to be late to that party. And trust me, these guys, as much as this sounds laughable right now, looking at these dollar amounts, they were living. And they were loving it. So, yeah, at the end of that deal, of course, Scottie Pippen should have gotten paid more. Duh. But we can say that right now about current quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes. Oh, man, what is he doing in the AFC Championship game? Basically winning it, but losing it because of Dee Ford. And then winning the Super Bowl. How much is Patrick Mahomes making? How much is Dak Prescott making? Like, we could always play that game. But the game of signing a deal and holding you to it, that's an age-old game that, unfortunately, Scottie Pippen and others have lost.
All right, we got to keep it moving. Thank you, Jim.
Got it.
LeVar Arrington will join Speak for Yourself next. Tom Brady got kicked out of the park while working out. We'll see what L.A. thinks about it. Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley on a Tuesday afternoon. All right, let's get out to L.A., LeVar Arrington's crib out in Pasadena. And let's talk some Tom Brady, who was kicked out of a park in Tampa Bay, in Tampa, for working out. Sorry, Tom Brady or Tampa
team can't wait to welcome you, but they're kicking you out of the park. Does anyone have a problem? Marcellus, you got a problem with them kicking Tom Brady out of this closed park because of coronavirus?
I don't. Yeah, he got to go like everybody else. Look, in a situation where we're trying to create law and order, the order is that you have to respect what the law is in the strong suggestion in Tampa, which is right now this park is closed. I've done this just a week ago. I was taking my kids on a bike ride. The L.A. parks and recs are closed. There's an L.A. river reservoir and it's closed and there's a gate. I went right around it. And I kept riding with my kids. But while I was riding, I was like, if somebody stops me right now, I have no explanation. I'm just trying to get the kids out the house. So Tom Brady, his explanation is I play football for the Buccaneers. And they're like, yeah. However, you just can't do that right here. So even Tom Brady's not above the law, not above the order, which is stay your butt at home. So if you don't stop Tom Brady and someone finds out Tom Brady is practicing at a park, good luck the next day trying to keep those doors closed. So, yeah, you had to stop them.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the Tampa park staff sending them home. I got a problem with Tom Brady putting the park staff in position to have to come tell him he needs to go home. Obviously, Tom Brady being the figure that he is, you have to carry the expectation and the standards of what comes along with the stardom that goes with your reputation. So I look at this as it's not about conduct, right? It's about health. There is a pandemic going on right now, and we're not totally clear. That's why we're doing pulling up to the crib moves and stuff like that. So I tend to lean on the side of Tom Brady needs to be respectful and responsible of the law and what governs what's taking place right now. So I thought that was more of a kind of – not responsible decision by Tom Brady in that moment.
All right, listen, I can't disagree with either one of you, but I'm going to. I think both of you made excellent points. Marcellus, I like the point about, look, if word gets out, there'll probably be a crowd there the next time Tom Brady's working out a park. I get all that. The reason why I'm going to disagree is because I think I finally moved to a position on the coronavirus. We got to live. We can't exist. All this existing we're doing, and again, it's easy for me to say it. I don't have kids. Y'all certainly do. Y'all are parents. Y'all have more responsibility than me. But at the end of the day, we're going to have to live. And there's some risk to living, a lot of risk to living. And whether it's the coronavirus, the flu, or any number of diseases or car wrecks or whatever, people take risk in the pursuit of living. And so I can't disagree with you all, get why they did it, but I'm just, maybe I got cabin fever, maybe I'm just, I want to live. And so I get where Tom Brady's coming from. He wants to live. He wants to prepare for this season. He's out there, I'm sure, preparing himself independently, socially distancing. But I'm just telling you, as of April 21st, I want to live. I want to go to Wally's. I want to go to Beverly Hills. I want to interact and mingle with people, and I'm willing to pay the consequences. I don't have kids. I don't have the responsibilities y'all have. Maybe an irresponsible statement, but that's just where I'm at right now.
Hey, I can't dismiss exactly what you're saying right now because I know I'm running out of these damn shirts, and I know you need to hit Ross, too, because we're getting a little thin over here, so it's time to go out there and live it. But you just can't think. Like LeVar said it, Tom Brady was kind of reeking of, I can get away with this even if I get caught, and that's irresponsible because Tom Brady knows he shouldn't put that type of pressure, public pressure, on these people for that.
I'll be back. I'm going to go rob
a bank
even
though it's
against the law.
Hey,
I'm going to go live.
Hair store. Go rob a beauty salon and let them comb your hair. Try that. All right.
That ain't
Uncle Jimmy's just Atlanta. Around the corner. More speak for yourself.
They open in Atlanta.
After this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley on a wonderful Tuesday afternoon. All right, let's get out to Uncle Jimmy's crib. See what Uncle Jimmy has to say about, do you have a big dummy of the day and a take on Tua Tagovailoa?
Yes. Big dummy of the day. Go to the person that still can't say Tua Tagovailoa. Yes, that's who the big dummy of the day is.
Yeah, you just screwed up the name, but go ahead. You got a take on Tua?
Yeah, man. First of all, let me. Yeah, really. Look, man. First of all, man, Tua is not a Tesla, you know, a car of the future. Tua is a DeLorean, that car from Back to the Future, okay? All right? Remember when we first saw that car in the movie? We was like, man, that car is bad. That's just how we saw Tua in college. But what happened when they started selling that car in real life? All right? They had a recall, just like they gonna have on Tua. They already done had a recall on his hip. All right? How you gonna have a recall coming out the draft?
All right, right.
He's a DeLorean.
All right, well, we're gonna have a recall on Uncle Jimmy.
So I gotta
see you tomorrow. You're gonna hire.